Exactly right. My family and my grandfather used to live in the Inner East in Oakley, and when I was eight, he gave me a crystal set, and we spent an afternoon putting it together on the kitchen table to my grandmother's curiosity. And I said to Pop, as I said to my grandfather, "Where are the batteries?" And he said, "It's like magic." He said, "It doesn't have any batteries. See this little germanium," for those technically orientated out there, "see this little germanium diode in here? That's where the power comes from the carrier wave." And after that, Roger, I was hooked on radio.
You better explain what a crystal radio is, because nobody these days will know.
Well, basically it consists of it's a receiver and a single oscillator, which oscillates at a certain frequency that you set up with the tuning coil or tuning capacitor that you twist to find AM radio stations on the AM band. Mm. And in this case, it was the Races and one other Melbourne radio station that I'd heard. And I'm there and I'm looking at this crystal set and I'm thinking, my God, here is this little device, you know, and it's got the radio signals and I've got the earpiece in. And Dad, this is like magic, I said. Absolutely beautiful. I loved it. And ever since then, I used to listen to it at night. And then a strange thing happened. At night, you could actually hear more radio stations. And after that, I was just so hooked. I was blown away. I even took it to school. And I think about 15 weeks after that, I lost it. And I was very disheartened at school. And who knows where it went. But now you can buy them for $21, $22. They're a great kids' Christmas gift.
I have to say that I had a crystal set as well. And as I remember, it had a coil. It had a cylinder with copper wire wound around it.
Yep.
And that tuning device that you mentioned.
Yep.
But you could also run something up and down that coil.
Absolutely. You could tap it off to different stations and bandwidths. Yes, you can.
It's amazing. It was amazing.
I love it.
Just like you, I sort of looked at it and I thought, how on earth does it work without batteries or plugging it in?
Well, it's interesting you should mention about coils, because I'll walk you through a little bit of a story. Back in 1987, 88, I was in an electronics factory, hence my, you know, I went to school and done year 12, and then I thought, well, okay, what do I do now? And I seen this job advertised in the paper in Holloway Drive in Bayswater. And I joined making inverters and light bases for the railways and various other contract work that we did. And then further on, I joined the RAPS service where I worked. That's the Remote Area Power Scheme of New South Wales, Victoria and the South Pacific. And we went around and installed solar panels and remote power systems in Farays and Vanuatu and New Caledonia. And I loved what I did, Roger, I really did. But hence, with this coil business, armature winding, I suppose, was my trade back in the 80s. And then one Wednesday, I was listening to a radio station and I said to my co-worker, I said, there's something on 98.1 with great music. You know, they were playing this great 1950s music. It was really nice music. So I rang the number concerned and I joined as a member back in 89. And then back in 1990, I found out they were going to do go live with their test transmissions down at East Ringwood. And then the Croydon Festival came in January. I think it was 1991, and they set up full-time broadcasting, and that's when I met Ian Douglas and some of the folks from the technical committee. And then by late 1991, they wanted someone to do the overnight service or, you know, more announcers in the pool. So I joined the Friday night show at that stage back in 1991 with the Nightbreakers program after Gerald Smart. And he was one of our previous technical coordinators.
In the notes that you gave me for this interview, you interestingly wrote that one of the jobs you got, or one of the programs you got to present, was initially presented by twins.
Yeah, well, I spoke to someone by the name of Peter MacArthur, who worked here for a long time at Radio Eastern. He also worked for Radio Australia. And one Saturday afternoon, I came in because he wanted someone to help some twins work out, mainly panel operating, of course. And anyway, I was sitting there on Saturday afternoon, and there was an argument between twin number one and twin number two, to which track that they wanted. I remembered it was ABBA. And in the end, the one with the long ponytail said, well, I want, you know, Dancing Queen, and the other one wanted something else, and they had a bit of an argument. So they both looked at me and said, Pete, all right, just go with whatever track you feel. And I played Fernando in the end. So anyway, they continued on for a little bit longer, and the oldest twin said, I think I'd better go and join my sister. And they never came back. And I rung Peter MacArthur and I said, well, I've got a panel here in front of me. I've got three CD players. I've got two turntables. I can do a radio show. Would you like me to come a presenter? So I filled in for that hour, coming up to the top of the hour until the next presenter attended. And Peter rang me back on that Monday and he said, well, you're already a member. How do you feel about doing a program? And I said, well, I want something quiet and out of the way. So they parked me in after, as I said, Gerald Smart with the Nightbreakers program after 12 a.m. So the Nightbreakers program, my show, went from 1991 till 2011, 2012, which I gradually sort of – I wanted to get back, but everything was against me at that stage. I was in Shepparton. I have a son as well, and I ran out of time. So then I opted for production and technical assistance where I could.
Did you feel in those days that you were much closer to the community than perhaps is the case today, in the sense that you were out in the community doing things with the community, which we perhaps don't do enough of these days?
You got that right. I think a few things have changed. You got to take one or two steps back. Radio Eastern was small, and I can remember back in the early 90s raising money for a fridge, for example. I remember getting the money for the fridge and the photocopier. And we actually went out and knocked on doors here in Croydon. We had sausage sizzles. We had the Radio Eastern Sub-Social Committee, which other announcers will remember. Hello, Peter O'Brien, if you're listening. He was on that. And it was like a small family, and it was a very different radio station that we have today. But these days, because since 1998, you've got all these online streaming services available, it's harder for broadcasters, in a sense, to entertain the listener directly, you know, because you've got podcasting and you've got other streams of radio coming in. For the older sort of traditional broadcasting, as a sense, it's harder than ever to sort of engage with the community that it could be engaging. You can do it, but I believe that there are different ways of doing. You have to be sort of more constructive, more inventive, if you like, or more sort of. We have to do the work now more than ever to keep that license. And the other reason I love radio so much, even in Shepparton, where I'm living, is because it's great for blind and vision impaired people. And hence, I was president of Vision Australia Radio for 4 years in Shepparton. I was also president of shepradio.com.au, a small local broadcaster, an online broadcasting service we've got up there. And going back to my old favourite, Radio Eastern, I've still got my finger in the pie at Radio Eastern, and I do production, like behind the scenes, and help out the girls from time to time and do all the CBAA stuff. That's Community Broadcasting Association. And I haven't forgotten, of course, Jimmy and Granville. For those listeners who can't see, I've got a four and a half year old Labrador retriever here on my left hand side. He's black in colour with brown eyes with his harness on. And he's always up and ready to go. And all Jimmy wants to do is please. If there's food in it, Roger, for him, he'll do it. And of course, the other people might remember, going back a bit further into the early 2000s and 2010s, my first guide dog, Grenville, and he was big and solid, and he was a bit of a gentle kind of dog and lazy dog, and, you know, he didn't mind Radio Eastern either. When the jazz come on or the country come on, well, he used to curl up in a corner and just go to sleep and do a bit of snoring and do a bit of dreaming. And so, yeah, so that gives, you know, the listeners sort of a bit of a background on why Peter O'Connor enjoys radio so much, because for a blind or vision impaired person, we as disabled persons, if you like, a lot of the stuff that happens in the world is by print, you know, print media, or you might have notes or the weather or things of that nature to work out. When I come and do a radio show here, usually I push the Windows key and the plus key, and that makes things a lot bigger. And, you know, you can read off the screen or track on and track off or talk to people or do whatever, I suppose, has to be done. But because it's from an audio sort of sense, radio is great, as I said, for vision impaired people, because they can tap into news services, what's happening in the community, what council's doing, what's happening in the future, where things are going, and you just sit back and enjoy it.